can you go? How low can you go? How low can you go?
Sup, sports fans, and welcome back to Low Expectations, the Grudendolf podcast. It is our 10th episode, and we are incredibly humbled that anybody at all has listened to this so far. So a huge thank you to you, the listener, and everybody who's been along for the ride with us. Even though we're essentially veterans now, we'd appreciate if you kept your expectations low. Wink, wink. And hope that you enjoyed the new theme song that we're testing out, and we're going to continue to keep you on your toes so that you don't know what's coming next. Anyway, let's get into it. This is Jenny Coco, and we've got Hales Hillsland in the house.
Hello.
And since we had such an extremely juicy topic tonight covering the past weekend's U.S. Women's Open in Houston, we had to get a really big star to join us, and we were lucky enough to be able to snag the one and only LPGA star and 2019 Solheim Cup Team USA member, Marina Alex.
Hi, guys. I know it's a mouthful to get out. All those accolades, you know?
I added all the superlatives. I mean, they all stick.
No, I'm really excited to be here. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So in the spirit of switching things up a little bit, to keep people guessing, we're going to take the questions we usually ask at the end, and we're going to move them all the way to the beginning. So these are the questions that we ask every guest. So what is your favorite club in the bag?
This is going to be a weird one. It is my 6-iron.
So it is weird.
I've had 2 hole-in-ones on tour with my 6-iron.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, when I go through my stats with my caddies, it's, like, one of my most accurate clubs. Like, if I'm, like, 160 to 165 yards, I'm, like, so thrilled because I'm, like, perfect 6-iron.
Wow.
You're probably random.
The first person to say 6-iron.
I know. I bet you I am, and I promise you I'll probably be the last.
We're going to start recording it and keeping a log of who says what, and we'll hold you to
Please.
It.
Please. Yeah, if anyone is 6-iron, like, maybe they're my soulmate if they're a guy.
Connect me then. If you find another
one. Connect me with another 6-iron lover, please.
Okay, so what is your favorite nightclub or bar or restaurant? And this can be pre-COVID.
There's some good ones. I live in Palm Beach Gardens. I've actually had, randomly enough, some funny nights at Rachel's strip club, which is it's like in West Palm Beach, kind of close to the airport. A friend of mine actually wanted to have her 30th birthday party there, so we did that a couple of years ago.
By an airport?
Yeah, it's they have great steaks.
I love when people talk about strip clubs and mention the food, as if.
Yeah, that's like
as if they're fooling anybody.
But there actually is a couple other great spots on the water here in Jupiter that I my friends and I like to go to. Square Grouper and Guanabana's. They're just like very beachy vibe. So it's kind of like one or the other for me.
It's either strip club or beachy vibe, and there is
no
in between.
There's really no in between.
Okay, and before we go off that, did you get a steak at the strip club?
Oh yeah, steak and lobster mac and cheese.
Oh, yeah. Were you only there for dinner? Steak? Like, did you stay?
We had a show. We stayed. It was a night. There was both men and women equally present for this experience.
I love that.
Wow. Nice theme of this podcast.
Yes. Their steaks are expensive. Like, they're borderline Ruth Chris prices.
Wow. Wow.
They really take their, like, well, this is
but it also comes with
they're good. They take their quality. They take their meat quality very seriously, Rachel.
Oh, that's really a great, great answer. Oh my God.
Great start.
Okay, so your dream foursome, living or dead, golfer or non-golfer?
So this really fluctuates. And because it's Christmas, and I've said this before, I actually really want to play golf with Will Ferrell. Like, and I was watching Elf yesterday, and so that kind of has triggered me. Phil Mickelson, for sure. And probably and I have to say Tiger because I just do. And then if I could throw my dad in there, because he would love playing with Phil and Tiger. But the Will Ferrell thing is just, like, out of left field. I would just, like, add him for entertainment value.
I mean, yeah, I feel like Will Ferrell and Phil would get along really well.
I think so
they would be a blast together.
And then Tiger will, like, fulfill my needs for, like, just watching unbelievable golf.
Yeah. That might be one of the golf-heaviest dream foursomes we've had.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we get a lot of celebs or
dead people. Oh, okay. No, I'm a golf nerd. I think that, like, if there's people I haven't been able to even watch play, like, and Tiger and Phil really maybe, like, once in my life I've seen live.
Yeah.
So it would be, like, the coolest.
Wow.
Have you met them?
No.
We never know.
No.
You guys both play golf. Do they know that?
Yeah. I have a story about that's really not, I can't say on this podcast, to be fair.
Oh my God, such a tease. I love it. But, now I'm going to be dying to know.
Yeah, I could tell you guys at another point, but it's really,
okay.
It's really not podcast perfect.
After we stop recording, I'm going to ask. Any listeners will need to pry that story out of our cold, dead hands.
You can just leave it up to whatever your imagination is there.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, so you turned pro in 2012. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is extremely impressive. So we want to know a little bit for the listeners and everything, what your path to being a professional golfer was and how you were introduced to the game. And when did you know you were destined to be an LPGA player?
That's kind of a little bit loaded. So college was a good and a bad experience, I think, for me. Like, I had a year or two where I played, like, really great, and I was so thinking professional golf was, you know, the next step. And then kind of towards the end of my time there, I was struggling with my game and golf, and I think it was just, like, a big learning curve, so I wasn't quite sure if I was even gonna, like, if professional golf was even capable, you know, for me. And I was like, well, I knew I was going to try, but I definitely didn't have a lot of confidence in the success of, like, what this path would be for myself. And I was lucky. I played my very first professional tournament at the LPGA ShopRite Classic, like, week after NCAA championship. I wrote them asking for a sponsor invite, and they gave me one. And, like, I grew up in New Jersey and not super close to Atlantic City, but I think all of that was, like, kind of helpful in my bid for asking for a start. And my first day, so my dad caddied for me. First day was, like, a disaster. I don't remember what I shot, like, mid to high 70s. I was so nervous. Like, I think a shank one. I don't know. It was not great. And I went out the next morning and I shot 66 and I made the cut, which was sick.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I ended up finishing, like, I don't know, somewhere in the 30 range. And I made, like, $6,000 or $7,000, and I was so excited.
Off an exemption?
That's unusual. It was really cool. It was very unusual. So, like, I took that money and then I bought a car with it. And then I used that car to drive, like, all over the Smetra Tour that summer.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that was cool. So then I played Smetra that summer and I, like, did all the stages of Q school, got to final stage and missed getting my card by, like, I think it was 2 shots. And I remember three putting the last 2 holes of the tournament to not be, like, in a playoff to get like full LPGA status. And I was just, like, beside myself, like, hysterically crying. Like, it was like my life had ended. Right. And I ended up playing pretty much that whole year Symetra Tour, but it turned out being a blessing. Like, I drove to every event, and I ended up finishing 3rd on the money list.
Wow.
And that's how I got my LPGA card, which was super cool. But that story in itself was, like, is so strange. I got out there and I just totally did not feel like I belonged on this tour at all based on my golfing ability. I hit it short. I was not consistent. I wasn't even that great of a putter or a chipper, like, any of these things. I was watching players and I'm like, oh my gosh, I suck compared to these girls. Like, I'm terrible. You watch, like, Inbee Park or Kari Webb, and you just like see these people like on the range, like Suzanne Pedersen, and you're just like, what am I doing here?
this is the end of the road.
Like, this is the end of the road. Like, okay, cool, I made it. Like, okay, like I'll just play out this year, and like this was an achievement. Okay, great. And so I missed like, I don't know, a bunch of cuts, like at least 10, I would say 10 to 12, like in the first section of the of my what would be my rookie season. And well, I guess it technically wasn't my rookie season, but whatever, to me it was. And so I qualified for the British Open on like a random tournament that holds
while you were sucking so badly at golf.
It's the best like the best 2 days I put together, right, in this tournament in Canada. And this ends up being like a pre-qualifier for the British Open. So they give out 5 spots to people who have or who are not in the field that aren't exempt. And so like they just go down the leaderboard and the top 5 people get in to the British. So this is the equivalent of how Sofia Popov was eligible to play the British. So it's like they do it every year. They just pick which event ends up being the qualifying event.
Wow, that's so interesting.
It is interesting.
Is there any rhyme or reason to how they choose it? I assumed it was because it was Canada, and Canada is kind of like wannabe UK.
No, I think it just has something to do with the timing prior to the British. So I think they pick an event that's either like 2 or 3 weeks out, and then that's like the qualifying one.
Wow.
So I find out I'm in the British Open. I'm like, wow, this is ridiculous. Okay, amazing. Like, I make my first cut in 2 months, and I'm now going to the British Open. And I go to the British Open and I finish 9th. And then,
oh my God.
This is why golf's weird.
Golf is the weirdest thing.
Yeah. And so it was Royal Birkdale, which was like a really cool, amazing, like super hard golf course. And I think it was just such a hard week that making like a bunch of birdies, which I clearly was not very good at doing, like regularly week in and week out on the LPGA, which requires you to like make cuts and be in contention a majority of the time. So it kind of, I think, played a little bit into a strength for me because it was like a lot of pars, not making mistakes. And that's like, was more of what my game was suited for at that point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, fast forward, like that basically got me into like a bunch of stuff that rest of that year and even into next year. And then it kind of just like was a snowball effect of like just having more opportunities to play and all of that. And the rest is kind of history from that point. Wow. But it just afforded me time to like keep trying to get better, which I desperately needed because my first year was like, I just was way in over my head from like a ability standpoint.
If our preliminary research prior to this podcast episode tells you anything, no one has written about that. So that, according to the internet, that never happened.
The internet's all right.
Until now, this podcast, of course. But according to the internet, you hit the ground running, and I think that's what you're focused on. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that they give you. Were you the rookie of the year?
Yeah, in 2013. No. That's what something said.
Oh, someone that's said a really that. Nice. Do they think I'm Maura Jutanagarn? Because I'm pretty sure that she was rookie of the year in 2013.
I saw it in something. I want to say that.
You know what? We said it, so it's a fact now. We're journalists.
Well, you're journalists.
We're allowed to make our own rules.
This is the real story.
So we did want to fast forward, though, a little bit to the 2019 Solheim Cup, which we'll talk about that performance in a minute here. But really quickly wanted to check in on the status of the 2021 Solheim Cup, knowing that it's going to be played in Toledo, Ohio, which is actually my hometown. At Inverness.
Oh, cool.
So I had a few questions just about how it all works because that also isn't written about really on the internet either.
I can answer
like
whatever you need
around how the teams are chosen, when they'll be chosen. Yeah. And you know, obviously we know you were on the 2019 team, so we'll hear about how you were chosen and all that good stuff.
So the process is different for the US team versus the European team. And I'm not quite exactly sure of their qualification system. But ours is, we keep a points system and it's a 2-year cycle. I'm not sure exactly how the points break down, but if you finish anywhere from first to 20th in a tournament, you're going to get some sort of allocated points, and those just like accrue over the 2 years. In the year of the Solheim, so what will be 2021, the major points are worth more than what they would be in a non-Solheim Cup year, and I actually believe the regular events are too. So it's like if you're playing well in the year of the event, you're getting rewarded with more points than if you were playing well in the off year, which the off year would be 2020 right now.
Yeah.
So they will take the top eight off of the points, and then they will take two players off of world ranking who are not in off the points. So let's say they go through players 1 through 8, then they go to the world ranking list. And as soon as those players are, they cross them off the world ranking list, and then whoever the top two are from that point are on the team. Mm-hmm. And then Pat Hurst will have two captain's picks in addition to that.
Wow.
Okay.
So many complicated ranking systems in golf.
It's a little complicated, but a lot of it's point system dependent. Like that's how 8 out of the 12 are chosen, and then 2 are world ranking. And you see really cool stories with that. Like when Allison Lee made the team, I think she was a rookie that year, but she was killing it. And she didn't make it off the points, but she made it off world ranking because she had just done so well. And she had very few tournaments under her like Rolex ranking system. So she ended up like kind of jumping in at like a very high world ranking at the point of when they cut it off, which I think is usually 2 weeks prior. I think it's like 2 events before.
Oh, wow. So it's like right up to the
it's
wire.
It's very up to the wire. Yeah. So there's a,
when do you guys have to do those photo shoots?
Yeah,
they do. So that's the weird part. The hardest thing to deal with, and like I've had to do it, I did it last time and the time before, is they'll send you in for fittings like in March or April for clothes. They'll take all of the photos like beforehand, and you don't know if you're on the team or you're not.
So it's before you're actually on the team, they take all the promo stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. And then they will like splice together things that that they can use like from all of the content of like what they've taken of pictures of everyone that they think could be on the team.
Right. I mean, yeah. I use those GIFs that you guys did for the 2019 Solheim. Those are like some of the only and best LPGA GIFs that there are.
That photo that you guys posted today about, that was from
Marina. When I saw that, so for the listeners, there's a photo.
I was
going through Marina's Instagram, as I do before every guest comes on, and just scrolling through to see, like, you know, we were going to get some listener questions going, and was looking for a picture to do that with. And there's a picture of Marina like wrapping herself in the American flag in front of a green screen, looking terrified. Like you look
Want me to do something. And I was like, I don't think I want to do that.
Were you scared?
I think so.
But I love those though. Those are such fun little things.
Yeah, someone from LPGA Media sent that to me. And I was just like, or maybe my friend Tip Joe took that of me while I was doing that. I'm not sure the story behind that, but I have it, obviously.
It was
my best moment, but it's fine.
All right, so I guess we'll get into the U.S. Open since.
Sure, let's do it.
Very excited about that. So first of all, where were you?
Oh, I'm in Palm Beach Gardens on my couch, but that's where I've pretty much watched a majority of the Open yesterday, some Saturday. I tried Friday. And then Thursday, I wasn't able to watch the first round, but heavily tuned in over the weekend.
Beautiful. And so you're dealing with a slipped disc, is that correct?
Yeah, right now? I herniated my disc. I don't exactly know when that happened per se, but I was struggling the most. In September, like August and September, British Open kind of wasn't feeling great, and then it kind of just spiraled. And by the time I got through playing A&A, I was not in a good place. So I withdrew from the following week's event, came home, and once I got everything figured out, I realized it was a little more serious than I thought. So I just kind of had shut it down. I really was hoping to get back for the Open and CME this week, but it was just not happening fast enough. So it's okay. I am feeling a lot better, but it's not ready to
We're glad to hear. We want you 100%. You know, yeah. We want you to come back when you're ready. So
I know
this stage of the game.
Sneaky,
you know,
it's sneaky harder than you realize. With I take like the walking 4 rounds and the practice rounds and the programs like sort of for granted because I'm used to doing it. But when you first have to come back to do it, it is a lot harder than you realize.
Yeah, totally. You're like you're so on the whole time too. You know.
Yeah.
So this event then was this US Open for you is pretty unique because it was the first one in a while that you were experiencing as a fan. So welcome to Dark Side.
At first I was like, I know, I was a little like, oh, I wish I was there. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to like embrace this and like see, you know, what's going on. And there was a lot of really great golf this past weekend. And the course looked really hard, actually. I was like, oh, I'm kind of glad I'm up there.
It did look, I mean, obviously, I'm interested that you're saying
it isn't US Open.
Obviously, so, I thought it looked very difficult.
I certainly
that
felt
is narrow.
I mean, think that the greens were, too. I was on that.
The challenge that made it what seemed very difficult was usually when you get a lot of rain, you know, your greens are also soft. So it may play long, but it's, you know, for LPGA players, like there's, these girls are so good. They're so accurate, even with their long clubs, that a soft green conditions, like it usually becomes pretty low scoring. Mm. I don't know what they do at Champions Club and the other golf course. I think, both Cypress and Jackrabbit, I believe. Anyway.
Yeah. I think they're both part of Champions Club.
Champions Club.
It's two different
okay,
courses
yeah.
in the same club.
The greens were so dry, so they weren't necessarily getting roll out in the fairway that they anticipated. And then mm-hmm. you're having to manage hitting what seemed like 6 irons, 5 irons, you know, hybrids, all of that into firm greens. So that to me looked like the hardest element. And I think Aylin Kim, who was the winner, feel like she's a pretty long hitter based on what I was seeing on TV. And I think that definitely like helped her down the stretch because she was just able to have a few more clubs that were shorter in her hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going into this weekend, I know that last week when we talked to Sue Curtin and Allison Walsh, Allison was suggesting that people put the big hitters because, you know, US Open usually favors the big hitters. And then, you know, Anne Van Dam, Bianca, and I think whoever the third biggest hitter was all missed the cut. So
I
think it was definitely
it's more than just hitting the ball far. And even the girls that hit it a mile, they're still pretty accurate. So they're not missing a ton of fairways.
Right.
It's just the rest of the game. I mean, it is a US Open, you know, so you have to, everything needs to be firing, irons, short game, putting. And if those aren't working, it's not going to matter how far you hit the ball at the end of the day.
So since you are kind of experiencing it as a fan, what did you kind of think of the hype going up to the event? You know, there was a lot of promotion, the USG hashtag women worth watching. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I do. At first I was like, okay, this is cool. And I was happy to see, you know, some of the guys pushing, watching the coverage and all that, but a lot of it seemed really forced, to be fair. It didn't. And I'm sure that the PGA Tour players and the European Tour players like are genuine about wanting to watch us, but I just felt like some of that even seemed scripted.
Yeah.
And it also is just, the more I think about the slogan, I don't know how I feel about it. It almost has like a twinge of like condescending sound to it where I'm just like, well, we kind of know that we're worth watching. Like, I don't feel like it needs to be reminded. And, or there could have been just a better way or a different way to like push having engagement in the tournament than using the whole, you know, we're at a disadvantage in viewership. And like, so now we're going to like emphasize that even further with a hashtag that we want everywhere.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of like Kristen Wiig and Bridesmaids, that gif. It's like, help me, I'm poor.
Poor.
Like,
yeah. No, you know, like pretty much. Yeah.
Lot, like it just seemed, it had just like an air of like condescension to it because like,
this is the
biggest major for women, right? This is the biggest major in the United States. Like it's the one, right? And it should be enough to, you know, push the product, which is good. You know, there's so many engaging personalities, so many great storylines. Like, there's plenty of drama. It has everything that the PGA Tour has that people like, you know, like,
honestly, it does.
Honestly, more.
Fashion.
I think there's, well, we do have the fashion. We will get there. Don't worry.
We'll get there.
But I do think for an average golfer, the relatability of the game is there compared to the PGA Tour. They're just completely different products, and that's fine. And I just wish that we just had more opportunity to be shown to a wider audience, because I think truthfully, we have a great product, and it's like, it's a lot of like chicken and egg deal where, you know, we don't draw ratings, but we're also not really on at ideal times. And we don't spend a lot of time on network. Like, we had Saturday was 3 hours on NBC. And then Sunday, obviously the tournament had to get postponed. So then like we had no NBC on Sunday. I do think they did a nice job for Monday's coverage, but that would have been really cool if that was on NBC and there was like a much wider audience possibly tuning in.
Yeah.
I think that the ratings would be a little bit closer to what they need to be if we just had more opportunities to be seen by people. Yeah. And that's the problem. But it's like, they're not going to give us it. Well, I can't say that for sure, but historically we haven't been given those things because we're not drawing the attention to like bring in the money to then get the network times. But it's also like, well, maybe you just need to like take that leap, you know, and see what happens.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I know we were talking a little bit before about how golf like seldom looks outside itself for like inspiration or for promotion or things like that. But
yeah,
I think that's something that the LPGA could totally benefit from. Like, you don't need to have, I mean, if the Kardashians have like told us anything, it's, you don't need a good product to like get people interested, right? Like, as a marketer, you can get anybody interested in anything, and that's your job. So fucking do
yes.
it. You know?
No, and you're right. I mean, and that's the part that frustrates me, because the product is there. Like,
it's
probably
still there.
For the first time in my time as being, so I guess this is like 7 years. Each year to me, the product has improved so much, like quality of players, diversity of players. You know, it's cool. Like, you're seeing a lot of winners, young winners, but older winners. Like, you're seeing such like a range of things happening in the last couple of years on tour. But again, it's just like no one's seeing any of it, or
yeah,
not
exactly.
enough people are. And that's the part that like is really frustrating. I mean, we can like Friday was a disaster, which it's like a missed opportunity, you know, not really being able to see us when it's like prime time major championship. And it's like, we're still, are we not important enough to be shown more? I don't know. I mean, those are questions that like really need some answering.
Absolutely. And I think on top of it all, as if the coverage was one thing, the announcers kept calling it uninterrupted coverage, which we kept laughing at. We're like, how can you call it uninterrupted coverage? Like, we have to switch between three different streaming services or telecasts to actually watch.
Yeah.
Friday, there's three switches. So it's
Friday
like, how can you, with a straight face, call this uninterrupted coverage when this is, like, you're making it so difficult to actually watch it?
And I, the frustrating part for me is, like, if they, it was a 1 hour delay, right? It's, that's like peanuts, really, when you're looking at, a lot of weather delays happen all the time. And for big and important tournaments, especially on the men's side, like, they make shifts. Like, they figure out how to get it done.
Yeah.
And I just don't think at that point, like, the correct decision was made at all. And it really resulted in, like, a lot of angry fans, myself included, but then just also, like, really a missed opportunity for people to watch golf. Like, no one wants to watch things after they've happened, especially with the access to live scoring. And if you're following a leaderboard, like, you can see things are already done or finishing up. So then when you're watching it on TV later, it's like, you know, this isn't happening right now. And it just doesn't like give you that same feeling. At least I don't think so. Like, I rarely watch things that are tape delayed because I'm like, well, I already know who won, or I already know what they shot today, or whatever the case may be. So it's like, I'm not quite as excited to like experience that with everyone else, but also like as it's happening.
Yeah.
With who you're watching. So it's like, it's a struggle. And I just feel like, again, missed opportunity for us to grow more.
Exactly. Because I think at the end of the day too, it's like the players are the ones who are losing out the most here, you know, and the fans.
And the fans. And this year is unique, like obviously with so many people working from home. So it could be a bigger opportunity for people to watch us because, you know, you can have the TV on or you can have something on your laptop or your iPad streaming and you're not, you know, your boss or whoever's not necessarily like looking over your shoulder. And I know that I'm sure a lot of people, it's fine, are multitasking all the time. So I just think that there was an opportunity there to get a few more people into it that just we didn't get.
Yeah, and I think just calling it a missed opportunity is the right way to say it because
yeah.
At the end of the day, the hashtag Women Worth Watching, it was well-intentioned. You know, they didn't mean any harm by that.
No.
It almost is like, can we get past the fact that these are women playing a game and just like appreciate that people are playing the game, that it's worth watching on its own? Like, and you said at the beginning, it's like, it's obvious that they're worth watching. It's the women that are the best at what they do in the entire world. There shouldn't have to be a dedicated hashtag to support that.
No. And like, I often fluctuate with frustration for, and not even just like that hashtag in general, but like days that are delegated for certain things, like Women's International Day or Women's Golf Day or like all of them. And I know that they're well-intentioned, but then when I really sit and think about it and I'm like, why do we need this day? Like, right. We shouldn't need this day.
I loved that your black and white photo that you chose was from like your childhood.
Yeah.
I thought that was spectacularly subversive.
Everyone else's were like really like nice. Well like done. Like,
we'll post yours. Like, it was really funny.
Put a picture of me in a choker like and glasses from like sixth grade.
It was genius. But then it kind of reminds me a little bit of like what Haley was saying, you know, and making it into, you know, I remember watching the movie The Founders, that's about the founders, the LPGA, great flick, highly recommend it to everybody. But at the beginning of the LPGA, they were like going to other sporting events like baseball games and boxing matches and like peddling, you know, like come watch the ladies hit the ball, you know, like they can hit it pretty far, you know, that type of thing. And I feel like in a way this like campaign was just like still doing that when it's like, we should be way further along than that at this point.
I know. Like, and those women did so much hard work to like get the tour started.
It was amazing. Amazing. So amazing.
It's really incredible, like the dedication to all that. But yes, to your point, I still feel like that rhetoric is like, it's still for some reason required to get people to tune in. And I'm not sure why. I really still don't know why. Maybe it's just people are not that interested in women playing sports in general. Like, I don't know. I mean, I see some stats that are strange that I still fathom. Like, I can't believe. And it's the 4% stat. Have you guys seen
that? Yeah.
It's been circulating a lot in the last couple
of
weeks.
One of the big ones.
That was a big topic.
Yeah. And not even just golf. Like, that's all across all sports, I believe, right? Yeah. That just, like, blows my mind still.
Yeah. And it's just like, especially, you know, they do such a show of like highlighting women in charge. Yep. So they did this like panel about women in media and they were talking about that 4% stat. Meanwhile, they've got the fucking Erica Nardini from Barstool. And it's like, dude, you're in charge of this. Like, I don't really want Yeah, like you can't complain the same way I'm complaining. You're in fucking charge here. Like you can do, someone should tell her she could do something about that if she wants.
They just didn't show up to cover the Women's Open. I was a little peeved by their content that they had posted overlapping our event. And like, I know that they were posting about us, yes, but it wasn't like the sole exclusive focus of like all of their content for 4 days. And like, I would have to go back and be like, okay, well, when they covered the Men's Open, were they also doing other random things and covering two things at once? Or were they delegating all of their time to covering the Men's Open? And I don't know. I'm not going to like say something that's incorrect, but I do think that like a little bit more attention could have been brought to us. Like maybe going would have been a start.
maybe.
I don't know.
Well, because also that's the frustrating thing.
Even for a day, like give us something. I mean, I really think it should be 4 days or five or whatever it is, but like something is better than nothing.
And it's the lip service too. It's like, it's like, don't gaslight me. If you don't give a shit about it, then don't act like you do, because your actions speak louder than your words. And like, you are not, if you're the biggest golf podcast, you know, like,
are they?
I think they are. I think they're the number one.
Sure,
I mean,
they are.
We're fucking hot on their tails, but
yes,
till that day comes, you know. I mean, I'm almost like afraid. Like, I feel like they're also like so, I don't know, it's all these like scary like Proud Boys in their basements that are like Barstool Gang, like Stoolies for life, and like they'll like dox you and like threaten
I don't know
you on Twitter.
I don't know what their deal is. I mean, I follow a lot of like their content across the board. I'm not saying just specifically golf, but like other podcasts that I've listened to too, like different sports and stuff. But like, I just think that the foreplay specifically, like, I just don't like what happened this past week with our coverage by them. I don't. I just think that if you're going to cover the game, then, you know, try to cover it as equally as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one takeaway we've learned from this past weekend is that gambling works, and that is how you get people involved in watching.
It is a big deal.
We set up our first ever pool, which was certainly a learning experience. There was a big learning curve on, you know, how to actually run a pool. But
it's harder than you'd think. I thought it was gonna be like 20 people.
How many?
84.
Yeah,
that's really great. That's awesome.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. And we had so many people write in saying, you know, hey, I've never watched a women's tournament and I've been this interested. Like, I've been watching every single day because I'm financially invested in it, which
$10.
Sounds silly, but it's real, right? It's like people bet on everything. And the reason we started the pool is because we couldn't find any other way to bet on women's golf. And so I think this is going to be a huge thing.
I think if like we can figure out how to get the technology that we need to like have more prop bet opportunities, mm-hmm. I think it would actually really elevate the interest in our game, because like you said, everyone loves to bet on sports. And I know that like you can do some stuff with the men, but I even think that like, I just think the whole system, there needs to come up, someone who's smart needs to come up with like a whole new stat tracking system that will make it way more user friendly to bet on stuff. And then I think that'll just take golf to an even another level, like beyond what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, because a week in advance, we were looking, because we have been saying for a while, how fun would it be to do a pool for the U.S. Women's Open?
Yeah.
And we went, you know, I went on Easy Office Pools and like, you know, Run Your Pool and all the like usual suspects that you, you know, use for a Masters pool or something, which I've done for the past like 3 years ever since I got into like pro golf kind of, you know?
Yeah.
So then it like was just weird to think, oh, I've never done one for a women's event. Like, but I'm sure that the capacity is there. And then the more you like peel back the onion, the more you realize the onion's fucking hollow inside and no one's fucking doing anything. Like,
no, I know.
Like, there's so many things that you, like, I feel like we blame on user error. Like, oh, we've never thought to do this. Then you look and it's like, oh, and I even emailed them and I was like, hey, we're looking to set up a pool for the US Women's Open next week. And they're like, ooh, sorry, we don't offer that. But they were offering the fucking Mayakoba. Right. So you could create a pool for the Mayakoba and you couldn't create a pool for the US Women's Open. And they emailed me back saying that
is that a USGA thing or no?
No, because they have one for the US Open. I think that they could do it for that, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's just a matter of like maybe the
putting the resources into setting that up. Yeah.
Also,
but they also maybe don't
you've
think
got
it's
to
like
assume
worth
that
it
can't be that hard to do it if you've done it before for another tournament, right? Like, how very different can it be? And so it's just laziness, right? Like, I don't know if a spokesperson from Easy Office Pools wants to write us a note. We'd love to hear why. But yeah, no, like that's just, I mean, we've been talking so much about how like, you know, the more we learn about the women's game, the more upset that we get at the slights, yeah, because we really think that you guys have earned better and you deserve better. Like, you're the best in the world, you know, like you've worked so hard. So
I think we do. I have faith that it is going to get better. I mean, it is, like, it is getting better. I just think as a player, like, I'm reaching a point of frustration because I want it to be better faster, right?
Yeah,
I do. And I'm like, how long is this process going to take, you know? And I just, but there are so many little things that go into, like, creating, like, what you see when you watch men's golf week in and week out. And that's, like, there's a lot of investment in that. Mm-hmm. Resources, financials, like, all of those. And it's like, we need to somehow get there. And that's the part that's just, like, a constant challenge.
Yeah.
Like, not like it's not like we don't know what the blueprint is. It's just having everything we need to, like, get to that point. And that's just not easy to come by, unfortunately. And I wish it was easier.
I know. I know that, like, the money thing obviously is so much of it, right? But
yeah,
I mean, every company and every business, like, starts from the zero, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you build like a good model for how to grow, and you can back that model up with, like, a product that is tried and true and, like, isn't going anywhere, I just don't see how, like, you know, there hasn't been just more done.
Yeah, it's a question I ask a lot. I don't have a good answer.
Don't worry, no one does, turns out. We'll keep asking, though, so that it will get better. Also, you know, another missed opportunity with cross promotion. Three of our generation's greatest talents are from Houston: Beyonce, Megan Thee Stallion, and Lizzo. And, like, that could have been a great way to bring in, you know, not only, like, pop culture references, but also, like, that's some representation of the Black community, you know?
And female representation as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. It would have checked so many boxes. So I don't know why they didn't call me and ask me my marketing ideas. It's weird.
I know. I think that, like, the crossover, I don't know if, like, people are afraid to ask. Like, I don't know why maybe those things are thought of and they're like, oh, we can't, you know, get them because they're too big. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure why, or golf is still in a position where they just don't want to really, like, step outside the box kind of a deal. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I can see Megan Thee Stallion really testing the limits of, like, the golf establishment.
Probably.
Reality.
Yeah, just a little
obviously.
Bit. Like, yeah, a little bit.
But I do think it speaks to this idea that, and this is not true of plenty of big corporations in every industry, not just golf, but, you know, the blinders are on, right? And, like, they think that they're thinking outside the box, but really they're just so squarely in the middle of it still. So I think that's something that we always kind of laugh about, certainly not growing up in the golf world or being really that even familiar with it to some
yeah.
extent.
Knowing really nothing.
Really knowing nothing. So, you know, it's easier.
And it's really good to, like, hear your perspectives, because, I mean, I have known this world my whole life. So to talk to people who don't really know it and they're trying to get into it, sometimes, like, people ask me questions like, why is this like this? And I'm like, honestly, I don't know, but it's been like this forever. And that's usually, like, a blanket answer. But sometimes people bring up good points where it's just like, that seems like silly. Why is it done this way?
Yeah.
And that, I think you guys kind of definitely can see that as trying to get into this whole golf community now, where it is like, this is just different, because it is.
I feel like we're aliens a lot of the time.
Do you? You're not.
Like, no, it's just like, you come, like, there are a lot of things we're still learning. You know, there's, like, so many terms and everything that I just pretend that
the terms.
Kind of know, and
yeah.
I really don't, you know, or I think I know, but it turns out I really don't understand. Like, we need to do an entire episode on, like, greens and regulation. Like, what the actual fuck does that mean?
That means
what is that? Like,
do you want to know what that is?
Okay, that one, yes, I do want to know.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
No, I want to keep not knowing.
Okay, so you have the par of the hole. So you have a 4, a 5, and a 3. Hitting the green in regulation is, like, on a par 3, it would be your first shot is on the green. That is a green in regulation.
Okay, that makes sense.
On a par 4, it would be your second shot. So you've hit it off the tee, and then your second shot is on the surface.
Okay.
So now if you don't accomplish that, you don't, it's not considered a green in regulation.
That makes a lot of sense.
And in, and on a par five, it's your third shot, because it's okay. Under the assumption that you're going to make, like, you're trying to achieve par. So you hit the green and then you are assuming, like, okay, two putts from there to make the par.
Okay.
So par three, first shot on the green, two putts par. Par four, drive, second shot on the green, two putts, four.
That's, and then a tall order.
Yeah. So no, and then that's how the stat is, like, developed. But a lot of, you know, so you, if you are considered a tee to green, like a statistically good ball striker, you are doing that repeatedly. You're hitting the par three the first time, or you're hitting the four on your second shot, and you're hitting the par five either on your second or on your third. You can also like achieve it under the requirement, but once you've missed the green in an attempt, then it's not in regulation.
Okay.
Donna and I, who is another one of our co-founders, you know, normally people would celebrate getting on the green in regulation. We would instead celebrate getting on the green in par.
So by your fourth shot on a par four, you're like, okay, I'm on the green.
We are pumped. We're like, let's go.
Oh my God. Also, okay, hey,
small ball benchmark.
Striking is such a funny term. Like, oh, great ball striker. Like, isn't everybody striking the ball?
Yeah. So some do it better than others.
I mean, you all look pretty good to me, honestly. I'd say you're all pretty good ball strikers. They're like, they're a great ball striker. It's like, isn't that just kind of like a great golfer? Like, isn't that the whole thing?
But I think it's here? Like more of a how they hit the ball. Like, some people really, like Tiger Woods. Okay, we're going to go like top. He is known for hitting the ball like incredibly well. Mm-hmm. So he would be a great ball striker. And then you could probably find someone else on the tour. Like, I don't mean to throw Jordan Spieth under the bus, but like, if you were to compare the two, he probably doesn't hit it as well as Tiger does. Mm-hmm. He's still a fantastic player, but hit him like hitting shots correctly and well and executing them from off the tee and like onto the green are not, probably, I wouldn't say they're as good as Tiger Woods, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ball striking is like always correlates to long game. And by long game, I mean everything except chipping and putting.
Okay. That makes sense.
So that's full shots, like drives, full irons, woods, like all of that is long game. And that is where like your ball, the term ball striking associates with.
I wish that I had known this for like the years I've been watching pro golf, because
honestly,
I'm always wondering.
We're going to need to do another episode with you though.
That's fine.
Do you have a very good way of, like, you just explain it very straightforward and, you know, I understand.
I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
It absolutely.
And then short game is obviously like all of the other little things. So that's including your chipping, your putting, the shots out of the bunker, all of that stuff is short game.
When you miss green regulation.
Yes, when you miss green regulation. Yeah. And then they call that game. They call that scrambling.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
We know scrambling, but it's a different kind of scrambling. It's where you don't want to keep score by yourself.
Yes.
It's our favorite way to play.
So. We can do a whole nother episode of golf terms.
But that's really exciting. We need that really badly. And I feel like probably our listeners do too.
Hey, whatever gets more people into golf, this is part of the problem. It needs to be easier to understand.
It is. It's even hard to watch sometimes, you know, like, and to understand. Like, I kept having to have the leaderboard up on my computer screen while I was watching on TV to like fully have a sense, because especially with, I mean, I don't know if it was especially this weekend or if it just felt because I was like, my adrenaline was higher this weekend because it was a major and I was sitting on my couch. I felt like it was hard to keep up with like everything that was going on, especially on Monday.
Yes. Challenging. It's just hard. If you don't watch golf a lot, then you're just, sometimes it's like, oh wait, what just happened? Or I don't understand what just happened.
Yeah.
I think this is a good opportunity to segue into Jen's moment of stardom we experienced yesterday.
International sportscaster here.
You are the voice of international women's golf at this point.
I mean, who knew? Yeah. Yesterday, waking up, that's how you'd end the day.
So to give everybody a sense of how this all transpired, essentially on Monday morning, the Grutter Golf inbox received an email that was from a guy named Giles, who said he was with the BBC and that they were looking for somebody. What?
How do you pronounce his name?
Yes, Giles Guilford.
Really? Okay.
Because when I called him, I actually Googled whether it was Giles or Giles, because I didn't know. And I was like, I'm
smart.
An idiot. So yeah. Look that up. And I was like, hello, Giles. This is Jen from Grutter Golf. And so he said he was looking for someone who's passionate about the women's golf game to give their opinion on the women's US Open. And so we're like, yeah, sure. That sounds great. You know, no problem. And then, so I get on a prep call with him. I'm the only one who's available. Haley and Kiki are both on the road. And so I was in touch with him, and, you know, in the phone call, then things kind of take a turn, but it's a little bit too late. Cause he's like, all right, so we're going to ask you to give kind of a summary of the day's events. And I was sitting there and I was like, okay, I've been watching, obviously I'm working from home and I've been watching the tournament the whole time, but not like reporting on it necessarily. Like, yeah, a lot of retweets, a lot of, you know, like outfit commentary, but I didn't know if that was like what the BBC was looking for at that point. So I started to get a tiny bit nervous. So he's like, all right, we'll try to send you, you know, a Skype link. The Skype link didn't work. Sent the Zoom over. And meanwhile, too, as we were approaching the 3:30 recording time, I was starting to like sweat a little bit more. I also had a phone call for work at 2:30. And that was right around the time that Ailyn Kim was taking the lead in winning the US Open. So I kind of was a little spotty on exactly what had happened. Like, I was there, but then I was also trying to set up my room. And so like, I was interviewed, or I gave my words like right after they had just given the acceptance speech, like the trophy had just hoisted. And so there was not a lot of time to recap kind of exactly what had happened. I had known that she had birdied three coming down the line. I had known that Amy Olsen was in the lead before that, and that, you know, Shibuno had been hurt at the beginning of the day. You know, I had all that stuff pretty much down pat, right? But I knew nothing about Ailyn Kim. I didn't know.
That was the first question.
To be fair, it was like not until the last hour that people were like, whoa, this girl could like win. So
yeah, she'd been wearing the mask the whole time. She was the masked assassin. You know, we couldn't even see her face.
No one was talking about her. Yeah. Also happening behind the scenes leading up to the call or the interview, I was searching for how to watch it, because obviously as a proud parent, I wanted to watch Jen and potentially record it. And the more I searched, the more I realized, I was like, she's going to be on international TV. Like, she's
millions of people are watching her.
So I'm texting Kirsten. I'm like, I'm not going in the group chat because I don't want to hype Jen up or like psych her out or anything. I was like, she's going to be on international television in an hour.
I was afraid to like tell people too, because I was like, what if we're being pranked somehow? And so I told like my high school friends group chat. I was like, guys, lol, I'm going to like be on the BBC later. And they were like, what the fuck? Like, what's your background going to be? And I was like, shit, I hadn't even really thought of that. And I don't have like a lot of great backgrounds in the house. So I had to like completely rearrange my living room so that like it was facing a way that's not usually facing me, my plants in the background, because I wanted to highlight that.
It looked amazing. And that was the first thing that the host
was. It had been a big decision whether to light up the lights, whether that was professional or not. So I'm glad that I did the lights. But then the second question was, how big is this for Ailyn Kim to win the US Women's Open? And I mean, I just had to go for the stock answer of like, this is huge for her, as you know.
And life changing.
I had also just heard this stat and I wasn't really prepared. So like, I kind of fudged it around the edges, because it was something like either the past 10 out of 16 major winners or the past 10 out of 16 US Open winners. Unclear as to what it was.
US Open
have been from Korea.
9 out of 12, yeah.
So it's 10 out of 16, I guess. So I kind of spurted that out.
No, that was good. That's great.
Fuzzy around the edges, you know. Didn't specify whether it was all the majors. I felt kind of like I was plagiarizing everybody else's reporting because it was like, I thought it was gonna be like kind of like a man on the street interview, right? Like, hey, like, what'd you think of the US Women's Open? I'd be like, it was pretty great, you know, like, and just give like, be like, you know, like, was really like rooting for Megan Kang. She's from Massachusetts. And I just was like, yeah, North Dakota is really cold. So I don't know if all your viewers know that about Amy Olsen, but she's from a cold place. Like, it was like drunk uncle.
It was honestly, I was so impressed, so proud. Really, I think it's the beginning of a lot of other.
I think so.
Yeah, I was just thinking I should email Giles and say thank you.
I think they were just so riveted by the Gruder Golf Twitter that was why the email was sent.
That's how it came through, which I keep going back to our pinned tweet, which literally says, does anybody even pay attention to our Twitter? And it's like a retweet of Lenny Kravitz singing It Ain't Over Till It's Over, one of his seminal classics. Oh, which actually, this is a great time to sneak in a listener question. We all know that you're the co-producer of Which Song Is More of a Banger? And we're wondering if you have any banger matchups coming up anytime soon.
No, we've really dropped the ball, and I need to talk to the producer about it because I think people want it to come back. It needs to come back. The hiatus has been way too long, and her and I need to get the spreadsheet out and figure it out.
You really do. We
looking
really
forward to a 2021 return of that.
Yeah, I think that'll be perfect. We can like just all encourage her to just pop that off January 1. We need just a week of bangers. I think it should go every night.
All right. So should we do Hot or Not? And then we also got some listener questions that came in through Instagram, and that's a great way to get people to trick people into listening to the show.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Is by having them think that you're going to answer their question.
But really, I'm not.
So we'll have at least 10 listeners.
Okay. Perfect.
Which is honestly a lot. The Hot or Not section, though, we started this a couple of episodes ago. I think it's also worth noting, I don't think we've said it yet, but this is our 10th episode, which is pretty exciting.
Congratulations.
Woo. Pros now.
Double digits.
But the Hot or Not section, I think we typically would design this as like putting an outfit in front of you and us all commenting on it. However, we're not going to do it that way tonight. I think it's also going to be kind of a hybrid of like maybe some commentary on the players' performance this past weekend, because we actually haven't talked about that at all, really.
about anyone's actual golf.
It was all good.
Everyone did great.
But no, golf aside, I personally was very impressed with the fashion out there on the course this weekend. I thought that was in and of itself enough to tune in. Also, given the fact that it was being played in December, we got the opportunity to see some like cold weather golf looks, which you don't really get to see a lot. You usually see the skirts and the tank tops and all that. You know, the one thing I'll say to summarize the weekend, fantastic sweaters. Just oh my God. There's so many. I mean, you got the Beams from Shibuno, the Callaway Japan.
Enjoy your game.
Yui Kawamoto.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Who she's known for also quality. Her sock game. I noticed her sock game. I forget. I think it might have been the ShopRite. Yes. Knee socks always.
She's wearing
is a vibe.
It was when she was wearing the shorts and the knee highs, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So she good.
Great look all around.
And then you had obviously, I mean, who could forget Yuka Sasso's yellow Kill Bill energy that she was serving on Saturday?
Yes, she went full Uma Thurman on everyone.
That was probably one of my looks of the week.
I would say so too. I need to find out if those pants were pleather or not. I think they were, but I need to get.
You need to figure out who makes her clothes, and then the Asian clothing market is just like a whole other world that we don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Which I think made it so much fun to watch though. Like
there's some really interesting designs, colors. Like they are a way more, I wouldn't say it's aggressive, but it's just way more bold.
They're dressing. You know what I mean? They're seriously dressing. And I think, so I've heard some people say too, like one of the hits that I've like heard on the women's game is that there aren't like, it's too international or something. People use that as a shot against it, that like some of the best players, like a lot of the best players are international, but I think that's a strength, you know? And like
I've always thought society. It is too. Yeah.
I think it makes it so much more interesting.
A draw, because you just like meet people from, well, as a player, you're meeting so many different people from different places, which is super cool, and you get to work with them. But it also just like brings a lot of flair to the tour itself. Like, and you see it in the fashion, especially like some of this stuff is just like incredible. The parkas. I mean, I couldn't swing in a parka. I don't know if anyone was actually swinging in a parka, but they're, I got to imagine they're not cheap. Like those look like very well made down jackets.
All the clothes looked really expensive. Yeah. I did note that. I didn't know how I knew it, but I could just tell by all the insignias too. Like everything had to be fully custom because everything had like a billion patches on it.
A logo. Yeah.
I think it was Chella Choi that on Monday was wearing like almost like a mid thigh, like, you know, no collared like raincoat that almost looked like a really chic version of what you wear when you get your hair cut.
Yes, and really like digging. She made a hole in one and then like walked up and picked up her ball and she was in that jacket. And I was like, oh, it must be cold today.
Unbelievable. I really, really loved it. How would you categorize your golf fashion?
I am a little more plain Jane than that.
Beams Golf Japan calls you today. What do you say to them? You know,
I say that I'm probably not your girl. Like as much as I respect the flair, like for me, if I put on Shibuno sweater for Sunday, it's going one of two ways. Like I'm either winning or I am not coming close. Like, and that's just like, for me, it brings too much attention. Like I like to just float a little under the radar, and that is not subtle.
What about when Gruderdolf starts dressing you?
Okay, well, then we can talk about it.
Then we're going to introduce the pleather.
Yes, pleather. Pleather skirts, pleather capris, all of it.
Okay, thank you for mentioning capris. There were a lot of capris out there on Thursday.
Okay, I've been wondering about capris.
Like, where you just have that little bit of ankle.
See, I was seeing like mid-calf, like capri.
Also is back in, I guess.
Wow. So, like I'm thinking back to my limited 2 days and like that's
exactly
is what I have. When I think
about limited two.
But now crop pants are all like in, so.
Crop pants are in, yeah.
Do you guys want to, I do have a few listener questions too, so we can see if those hit anything.
Let's do it.
Well, so Tron Carter from NLU said, not a question, just expecting some heat, bring it. So I think we brought a little bit of heat tonight. Hope that satisfies the people.
I did a podcast with them a year ago, I guess now.
Cool.
And with the No Laying Up guys, and I can't remember. Oh, he like brought up like a beef that I had with like a reporter, like a golf reporter. They wanted to know about it.
What we've learned is that they love beef, which is...
Yeah, they do. They did a really, they did a great podcast today about the Women's Open. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to listen to it. It was really well done. I gave them props for that because I just think that, like, we're talking about just getting the exposure out there, but also, like, talking about it the right way. And I thought they did a nice job, which I was happy with.
Yeah, covering it as something that is news to cover as opposed to like throwing a bone to a struggling industry.
Yeah,
I think is,
and
like
they really like obviously are learning a lot more about the women's side, and like they're, you can tell that they know, they're knowledgeable, and that's a good thing. It's not just like doing it for the sake of doing it and then saying stuff that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So they props to those guys.
Major props. Wick Sports is asking if you like candles.
No.
Do you know Wick Sports?
No.
Oh, well, sounds like you might have a candle deal in your future, sister. Wick Sports, if Marina turns you down, I love candles. I'm burning one right now.
Yeah, we can.
Have you guys noticed that my face is candle lit? Okay. A Bit Better Than Bogey asks, if you could impersonate the typical male view of women in golf, what would it sound like?
It would be like, oh man, I bet you I could play their tees and beat the number one player in the world. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And it's just like, no, you can't, dude.
Wait,
I would throw you out.
To you, like, not
no,
on
like,
internet?
No, like, no, no. Well, a bit of both. Like, yeah. I think guys that don't know golf will say that, or people will just be like on Twitter being like, I can play from the same tees as them and like I could win a golf tournament. It's like, no, you cannot.
You can't.
You won't really make the cut. Like, I would take someone with no competitive experience, even if they say they're like a scratch handicap or whatever. If you throw them out there, even with the advantage of possibly hitting it further than us, there's just no way they're breaking. I mean, 80, to be fair.
Yeah.
Under competition with like having to putt everything out, with having to hit everything. You can't move the ball. You can't do all the things that you maybe randomly are doing with your buddies when you're playing, you know, around a golf. So no.
That's such a good point, especially with like the mud ball situation this week.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to roll this. I'm going to divot, or, oh, like I have mud on my ball. I'm going to clean it off. It's like, no, you can't do that in a tournament.
Which is so wild. Did you have any thoughts about kind of the course conditions and the setup? Yeah. Like what would you have thought if you were there?
I was pleased with Monday because it looked like it was way better than Saturday. It's really tough because you want to like obviously complete the event, you know, in a timely fashion. But it's, you don't want players to look silly either, but it's also like it is a major championship and you may not, I couldn't tell if they were getting mud balls on every single shot, then, you know, maybe it needed to be addressed, but it takes away the element of like, you know, you hit a good drive, but maybe you're just not in an opportune lie, mud ball or no mud ball. And then it's like, if you have that opportunity to place the ball in a position that is better, which is what you're doing, I just think it takes the pure element a little bit away from it. But with that being said, it also needs to be like legitimate. I just don't think the USGA is ever going to change their view on mud balls and playing the ball up, as you call it, like lift clean in place. Someone brought up to me, like, why don't you just do lift clean and drop then, so that you're not like pristinely placing it on like a really nice piece of grass. Cause like, then you can look and pick out and be like, oh, this part's a little bit taller than this part. And like, this is going to be a perfect lie. So I maybe there's a way they can meet in the middle at some point, but they definitely weren't going to try it out on us. That's for sure. And honestly, I know it sucks. And like, I'm sure if I was there, I would be like bitching about playing mud balls. But then again, I also wouldn't want to be the first USGA championship to be played lift clean in place. And then it's like, there's an asterisk on that. So it's right. Like, I don't want that for us as women's golf. I don't.
Exactly.
I want them to like test that on the men first before they tell us that, you know, cause then it's always like a disclaimer, like, oh, but they played the ball up. And it's like, we don't need that. You know, we don't.
The next one from A. Treadman is, which upcoming US Women's Open venue are you the most excited for?
I mean, next year's is sick. We're playing Olympic Club, which has hosted men's opens before. That's really exciting. Pebble Beach is coming up, I think 2023, which is going to be really cool.
Yeah. And I think Pine Needles.
Pine Needles. Yeah. I was going to say that. Is that 2022 in between?
2022. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never played Pine Needles and I know it's like historic on our schedule, a US Open rotation in years past. And so I'm excited to see what that course is going to be like. I think it's good. I'm hoping that they continue to like push the really championship venues for us. Mainly because we don't over dominate the golf course. So they can really utilize a lot of places that may be a struggle for them to continue to have men's opens. Like, I mean, you even look at Wingfoot, they did everything they could to make that place like long and it still didn't matter, but we don't have that problem. So I think that we can really take advantage. The USGA can take advantage of that. I hope they do.
Are there any courses on your wish list?
Like Shinnecock for sure is like, I really wish that got on the rotation for us. I think it would be so cool. And I think Marion would be incredible as well.
Oh, cool. Are there any other suggestions that you have or like other players have for, you know, addressing some of the issues that we talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I think like we just want it to be closer, and that closer doesn't even necessarily mean prize money yet. I just think that that means like everything is run, you know, the same way. And I think when that starts to happen, like it'll just make our product even better. And then that's how we will bring in more revenue to play for more money. But I just think if you take care of like all of those things, like internally, and you pick really good golf courses and you get the TV production like even better than what it is now. And you do like, you have featured groups and you have like better streaming apps and you have like all of these things that a men's US Open would have or men's majors have, you know, then it's like you have a product that more people will probably tune into. And then from there, like, that changes things. So I just think all of us would like to see more of that stuff happen. Mm. And I think the purses will follow from that.
100%. I mean, hey, we're ready to spend some money on this, you know, we'll tune in, we'll buy the merch, we'll show up and buy tickets. Like, we'll do whatever it takes, really.
You want your sponsor to feel like they're getting value for what they're, you know, what they're putting in. But that also means like you need to put together something that is worth that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Not the golf. It's just like everything else.
Yeah, it's everything else. It's not the golf. That's actually a really great way of putting it. Like, it's not about the golf. The golf is there. You know, it's the support.
It's seeing the golf the way that it should be seen.
All right. The very, very last question.
Okay.
And this is from Megan Wilmoth, who's asking, why do you love shorts so much?
Wilmoth, I knew it. I was waiting for this to happen. I've been wearing skirts more, but I don't know. I just like how shorts fit me. And sometimes I feel like if it's really windy and they're not the right type of skirt and your skirt is blowing all over the place, that's like also not ideal. And shorts are just a little bit more secure in that sense. So I think it, you know, it depends, but she hates shorts. I know how much she hates them. She will never make them. As much as I've tried to tell her.
Oh, really?
No.
We just had her on last week and that didn't even come up.
That's interesting. You should ask her.
Next time, the follow-up interview, we will.
You're like, when are you going to release a line of shorts?
All right, Marina. Well, do you have any questions for us?
I don't think so. Okay. Thanks so much,
guys. We covered everything. We really, really appreciate you coming on. And we hope to have you back another time.
Yeah, I'll definitely like to be back. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, until next time, hang loose, swing easy. We'll see you later. Bye.
Want no smoke with me? Okay. Turn this motherfucker up 800 degrees. Whole team eat chefs cause she's a treat. Ooh, she's so bougie, on appetite. I'm a savage, had a tooth nasty. Talk big shit, but my bank account match it. Hood, but I'm classy. Rich, but I'm ratchet. Haters kept my name in their mouth, not a gagging. Bougie. He say the way that thing move is a movie. I told that boy we gotta keep it lowly, me the room key. I done bled the block and now it's hot, bitch, I'm Tunchi. I'm mood and I'm moody. I'm a savage. Classy, bougie, ratchet.
Actually, while we're on the topic of things, Marina, I didn't get to show you my hat. My new hat.
Oh, is that it?
This is a Kangol shearling bucket hat.
They make hats still.
It took 3 weeks to get here, so it might be made to order, but
love it.
I just didn't want the interview to end without
like
you seeing
top
that.
Hat.
Speaking of sponsors, Kangol is interested. If Kangol paid you to wear like an Angora, like the Angora bucket hat, would you do it?
Probably.
Cool. Good answer. That's my personal question. That's not
never turned
down
a good bucket hat.
Woke up feeling like I just might run for president. Even if there ain't no precedent, switching up the messaging. I'm about to add a